and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Today on the show, we'll delve into Malaysia's economic landscape, dissecting the ambitious new industrial master plan and the government's relentless pursuit of foreign investment. However, beyond the boardrooms and the policy discussions lies a critical question. How do these grand plans connect with the lives of everyday Malaysians? Joining me on the show to discuss this further is Deputy Minister of Investment, Trade and Industry, Liu Chin Tong. He's also the DAP Member of Parliament for Iskandar Puteri Johor and Member of the Johor State Legislative Assembly for Perling. Chin Tong, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here. If I may begin by congratulating you on retaining your position after the reshuffle of the administration. A lot of people didn't, so this this requires congratulations. Can I ask you, the fact that there was the reshuffle was kind of on the cards or rumoured to have happened for so many months, we were waiting for it to happen. Were there periods, were there moments during this period where you were ever uncertain about the continuity of your tenure with MITI?
I think it was quite clear that I've been working on MITI projects, and particularly on new industrial master plan, working very closely with Tunku Zafru. And I think we know that we'll be working on those things and continuously.
So you were quite sure that you would retain?
Oh, it all depends on the decision of the Prime Minister. But we work on the basis that we are going to drive the plan and that our involvement is important.
So you work with the vision that you're going to be in the role for years to come. So you want to see it through.
Well, we want to see this plan through, not just from the point of MITI, but as a whole of government project. We think that part of the weaknesses of the way we govern or the way we structure governing is that we are thinking from a very ministerial perspective. But we would like to see a lot more whole-of-government approach so that the government takes seriously on various projects that it embarks on and think of it in a whole-of-government manner.
Yeah.
So whether I think of myself doing it from MITI or as part of the government, I think I always think that we do it as part of the whole-of-government.
Interesting. The past year, in this approach of not just thinking in silos and working in silos, but thinking about how the whole of government can achieve these grand master plans that we have, your personal experience, you former Deputy Minister of Defence, has that, has that previous experience served you in any way in this current role?
Yeah, definitely. See, in defence, you think about strategic outlook and how we should position Malaysia, and in defence, I was partly responsible for the defence white paper. So we look at how to position Malaysia and how to see Malaysia as a maritime nation, and why Malaysia is important strategically in between Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean. So in MITI, I think positioning Malaysia is very important. When we conceive the new industrial master plan, we see Malaysia in the following meters, three meters. The first meter is that we think that Malaysia occupies a very important and very strategic middle. I call it the indispensable middle in the global supply chain. We are not the highest in the global supply chain. We don't do the most sophisticated products, but we are not actually a labor-intensive, low-end producer.
Right.
We are in the middle. You take away, say, the Malaysian production. During COVID, for example, there were weeks where our semiconductor factories shut down. And factories in Detroit, factories in Hungary had to shut down because the chips didn't come out from Malaysia. So we occupied a very important and actually indispensable middle, not high enough, but not low. So our job is to push it higher, push it higher, and not to race to the bottom.
Okay.
The second middle that I think is important is middle ground in geopolitics. The defining feature of our time is geopolitical competition between China and US. So companies that used to see China as the factory for the world is now hoping to at least build their second supply chain. So they may still have a supply chain in China, they may not leave China, but mainly China for China market, and they want to de-risk and they want to have a second supply chain. So in the second supply chain, the first choice is home shore. So some of the US factory went back to US, some of the German factories went back to Germany. Yeah. Second choice is near shoring. So US company went to Mexico, went to European company went to Poland, Hungary, Southern Europe, Eastern Europe. The third choice is called French shoring. So they went to India. The fourth choice is called Southeast Asia. So we are uniquely positioned and we are seeing investment coming our way, in part because of our foreign policy posture, that we are neither for US nor for China. We are a non-aligned country, and that is strategically very important in the new geo-economics.
Okay, so you mentioned three.
The third one,
yes,
is that I kept telling investors when we meet investors, and we also when we discuss how we should position Malaysia, we want to see Malaysia as a middle class society. So when China joined WTO in 2001, it had about 100 million middle class. 20 years later, China has 400 million of their people considered as middle class. So China now has a huge internal market because they have a relatively wealthy middle class that also consume, and they don't just export, they also consume. So to see what we want to achieve over the years to come, it's important to see that we want to shape a middle class in Malaysia and in Southeast Asia, so that this wave of new investment coming in is not just helping us to produce to export, but actually grow a richer population that are better educated, that are better skilled, and that do a lot more sophisticated stuff, and through which they become a genuine middle class.
Right. I am intrigued. When you position the middle as a unique proposition, often we think of the middle as...
It's neither here nor there.
It's not really important. The middle child syndrome, you know, the middle income trap, it's often not the best thing to be associated with. Yeah. When we think about these unique propositions of Malaysia and how it fits in with the new industrial master plan, what does that vision of success look like? I mean, we'll talk about implementation later, but if we were able to achieve what we set out to achieve, what does Malaysia look like then?
No, so this plan is for 7 years, and by 2030, we're hoping that we'll have a lot more activities that are value-adding. So we do not just want to play in the realm of low wages, low productivity, low skill. We want to move up the ladder, so we want a lot more value adding. We want a lot more skill and technology that goes into it, and we also want a higher wage economy. So these are the broad outline that we have, and we have taken a different approach compared to all previous plans. The Industrial Master Plan 1, 2, 3 took a more sectorial approach, which is not wrong, which is also important. But we added a layer on top of a sectorial approach. We call it a mission-based approach. Economist Mazzucato came up with this idea of mission that...
Mariana Mazzucato came
up with this idea of a mission in the role of the state in or government in economy. That sometimes we are too often told that government has no role in the economy. But actually, government has a role to shape an economy, and we hope to achieve the following mission. Mission one, we call it building complexity for our economy. We want our economy not to produce at the low end. We want it to be more complex, and with more complexity, there will be a lot more linkages. You have FDI coming in, not just they come in, but they also build domestic supply chain. The second mission, we call it tech up. Tech up means more digitalization, more automation, more general usage of what they call technology, as well as innovation.
Tech up.
The third mission is push for net zero. Climate is important, and green transition is also very important. It is both a cost and also a potential area for investment. So the more you push for green transition, the faster the economy can catch up and actually can leapfrog. The fourth one, we call it increasing economic security and economic inclusivity. That means the economy cannot achieve, cannot be considered good if you do
leave
not
people behind.
Exactly. Mm. If you leave everyone behind, most people see the disparity within society become wider. It will become very problematic.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So these are the four missions that we have outlined.
So these sound wonderful, but Malaysia's never short of great ideas.
Yeah.
You've heard it time and time again. We all often lack the execution.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. I mean,
so I want to contest that.
Yeah, how do you respond to criticism?
Number one, I think
lofty.
Good idea is important.
Okay.
I mean, sometimes we are also having too much of lousy ideas in this society. So sometimes nice sounding lousy ideas, there's a lot of them.
Okay.
So good idea penetratingly good ideas is important for our society. And we think that good ideas is important, good execution is also very important. It cannot go...
Are these goals realistic? There are, you know, people say these targets... I'll give you an example. Malaysia wants to raise employment in the manufacturing sector, the median salary from just under 2,000 a month to 4,510 ringgit a month. And that's within 7 years. Mm. Wages have been depressed for so long. Is that an unrealistic target?
So the overarching idea of how we perceive Malaysia now is that we think that we are entering into an interesting phase. Politically, it's now more stable. But more importantly, we are now at the center of this global shift.
Mm.
Okay? And this global shift has the potential of helping Malaysia to see through a second economic takeoff. If we go back into history, between 1988 and 1997, that was Malaysia's first economic takeoff.
Before the financial crisis.
Before the financial crisis. And the origins of that economic takeoff was actually in 1985, US forced Japan to appreciate yen. And it's called the Plaza Accord. And in Japanese, it's called Yen Taka. So because Japanese Japanese yen was forced to appreciate, and it becomes too costly to produce in Japan, Japanese was starting to move their entire supply chain out of Japan into Southeast Asia, to Malaysia, Thailand, Indonesia, but mostly Malaysia and Thailand at that time.
Mm.
And that brought the Japanese firms into Malaysia in a big way with their Korean and Taiwanese suppliers. All came in between 1988 and around 1997. The economy was growing by about 9% per year, and wages also grew by about 9% a year. So that was the takeoff, exponential growth within a short span of time. I do not foresee that we'll be growing at the 9%. I think if Malaysian economy can really take off, we'll be growing at 5.5 to 6% consistently.
But what makes you think that the conditions are right for a second takeoff?
Because of the global shift. As I mentioned earlier, what characterizes where we are now is really the challenges that the world is facing. The world is facing post-COVID, more pandemics and more vulnerable health system. Number two, the world is facing geopolitics and war, and this will continue to color the economy, the global economy. And number three, we're facing a lot more financial instability. Number four, we're facing climate change. Now, think about this. Between 1989, when Berlin Wall fell, until, 2020, when COVID hit, there was a period of time the governing idea of industry is just in time. What is just in time? Just in time means if I'm a European company, if I'm an American company, I set up shops in Singapore. That's my regional office. All production were in China, okay? And this was also a period of time of containerization, where containers are moved. So you just move boxes.
Yeah.
You move boxes from China, Mexico, Thailand, and then you put a batch here, maybe. So in that sort of context, Malaysia was not really needed. Okay? Therefore, we suffered a period of time where we had premature deindustrialization for about 20 years. And that's why we were in middle income trap, we were in other trouble. But we are now entering into a phase where the governing idea is no longer just in time. It's called just in case. de-risking is the number one idea. Today, investor comes to come to talk to us, they are not talking about give me the cheapest option. Give me the cheapest labor. These are no longer the main concern. The main concern is give me the most secure supply chain. Give me the most resilient supply chain.
And Malaysia is positioned to do that?
Malaysia, as I say, we are uniquely positioned, including our geopolitical posturing, where we are not siding any side. We are
US or China?
Yeah, we are a middle ground. We are a, what they call a non-aligned country. And those are very important factors. Those are very important factors that position us uniquely.
Okay.
And reason is this. Why I say being the middle in the supply chain is also very important is because previously Malaysia was not really needed because everything could be done in China. And therefore, for the longest of time, no one realized Malaysia is slightly different from Indonesia, from Vietnam. Even many Malaysians bought into this idea that, we are competing with Vietnam, we are competing with Indonesia.
Yes.
But we are not.
Okay, so let's talk about that. I have heard time and again people say Malaysia is losing out to Indonesia, to Vietnam, to Thailand, to all our regional neighbours in the race to draw capital. So, are we not?
Yeah, we're not. Because the moment when the world spotlights Southeast Asia and suddenly people have never come to Malaysia for 25 years, countries who has ignored Malaysia for 25 years suddenly say, okay, we need to really discover where Southeast Asia is. Then when they landed in Singapore, they drive through or flew in from Singapore, come to Malaysia and into the region, they will realize that Malaysia is closer to Singapore, maybe 20%, 30% less efficient than Singapore. But admitting that we are not Singapore.
Okay. So
but we are not Vietnam. We are not Indonesia. We do not have a huge population. We do not have demographic dividend. We cannot do what they call labor intensive activities like Indonesia and Vietnam. And we cannot do the sort of cost that they have because the cost structure is different. But think about this: the moment the comparison point is. Let's say you compare yourself with Singapore. I don't mean that we are competing with Singapore. I think we complement Singapore more than we compete with Singapore. But the moment you think about this, Malaysia, okay, maybe Malaysia is 30% less efficient than Singapore. Okay, Malaysia is, the land cost is 1/5 or 1/8 of Singapore. Okay, wages, many Malaysian employers think that our wages should be 1/3 of Singapore, but actually, if you pay 2/3 of Singapore, you can draw any talent from Singapore.
So you think our wages should be at least 2/3 of that of Singapore to draw talent?
Or alternatively, I've been talking to some of these industrial park operators. I say, this is time for you to think about building decent housing for workers inside industrial park, and not for foreign workers, for Malaysian engineers. Then, the Malaysian industry or those who are in Malaysia, they may not have to pay 2/3 of Singapore pay. Let's say they pay half of Singapore pay with very decent housing without costing the workers too much or without costing the young engineer too much. The young engineer will say, okay, I get half of Singapore pay, but I don't have to pay for accommodation.
Singapore cost of living.
Yeah.
So you're saying the talent is there, they're all kind of working in
Singapore. Yeah.
And by maybe raising at least 1/3 of the wages, you'll draw them back to the industrial sector here.
In the short run, I'm not saying that, okay, we don't have problem with STEM, we don't have problem with education. I agree that we do have problem that we have to fix. But in the short run, there's no talent problem in Malaysia. There's only a pay problem.
That's the number one grouse that people say.
People just not prepared to pay.
Think about investments, right?
Because most of us are framed in this conception that, we're competing with Vietnam, we're competing in Indonesia. The moment you look at Malaysia, if someone invests in Malaysia, they would have access to Port Klang, PTP port in Johor, and if they don't like both of them, they can actually truck it to Singapore to use truck, TUAS to export. So logistically, we have the best logistic, Malaysia and Singapore combined. With the best logistic, both sea and air. Then, you think about the English language workforce. mid-level to high-level workforce. We think about, say, the English Common Law framework. I mean, we have all these advantages that make us almost like Singapore, admittedly not as good. Not
the ease of business is not quite there yet.
But you take a 30% discount. I mean, this should be how we frame ourselves. We should see ourselves as near peer to Singapore, but we have other advantages, for example, cheaper land costs, multilingual workforce. Right.
Is that what you're telling investors?
That's what I'm telling investors. We're not competing with Singapore. We're complementing Singapore. And in many ways, Johor and Singapore complement each other. But at the same time, Malaysian should see ourselves and think about our strategic outlook to position and posture ourselves as near peer to Singapore with a bit of discount at every, in many ways. Mm. But we are not competing with Vietnam, we're not competing with Indonesia. And because of this global shift, whether you call it China plus one or whether you call it building the second supply chain or de-risking, whatever the name it is, the flow of investment into Southeast Asia is unprecedented. Okay. And in this unprecedented flow of investment into Southeast Asia, none of us, none of whether Singapore, Malaysia, or Vietnam, none of us can take everything.
And the therefore, pie is big enough.
And particularly, for example, in semiconductor, there is a vertical integration. There is Singapore, Malaysia, Vietnam. It's vertically integrated and complementary.
Okay. It's not a zero-sum game. Can I ask you about the foreign direct investment? We see a lot of, in the past year, there's been quite a number of international trips trying to source for investment. I wonder whether that narrative actually is trickling down to the citizen. Do citizens see the direct impact of what it means for foreign direct investment, the impact on their lives, on our lives?
First of all, as I say, we are in a new era. For the longest of time, we were worried that we don't have enough foreign investment. Okay? But in 2023, as my minister, Tengku Zafrul Aziz, just announced last week, the first 9 months saw 225 billion ringgit investment announced and committed and approved. This 225 billion ringgit investment is highest ever for any nine-month period. The World Economic Forum says that Malaysia is one of the six countries in the world that has the highest amount of greenfield FDI for the first 8 months in the year. So we are seeing huge amount of approved investment. However, how does this translate into better life for ordinary people? It really has to come through domestic linkages. Once these firms are building their factories, whether they are using Malaysian contractors, whether they are procuring sufficiently locally. Later on, when they start production, whether they are paying enough, whether they are actually developing a domestic supply chain, or they depend they import everything and then just rebatch here.
Right.
So those becomes the responsibility of the government, not just of MITI, but the whole of government, to ensure that we translate the benefits of FDI into more DDI, into better pay, into better local industry that serves or connects to the global supply chain. So those are difficult questions because we came from about 20, 25 years of a long period where we think that we don't have enough investment. We think that we should compete on cost and try to press down wages, try to press down everything in order to be cost efficient. But suddenly the world has changed and we need a new conversation. We need a new frame. And that's where the new industrial master plan comes in with a new my frame.
Okay, talk to me about whether you think, how you're planning to communicate this. And you have, you know, if you have a tenure, your tenure during this administration, what would you consider success in your role? Metrics, your KPI as Deputy Minister of MITI, what would you consider success in this role based on this?
I want to see many more Malaysian industry thriving alongside with global investment. I want to see many more Malaysians getting better pay, better jobs. And I represent two constituencies in Johor at the border of Singapore. I would like to see that now currently every day 50,000 Malaysians are on motorbike going to Singapore working at jobs that pay less than $2,000. So we hire cheap labor from Bangladesh. Malaysians are cheap labor in Singapore. I want to see that gradually reduce. Many of them gradually find that they can find decent jobs with decent pay in Malaysia, and they can find a purpose in life in developing Malaysian economy.
Thank you so much for being on the show. That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching. Good night.